No, big voice guy. The campaigning resumes now. One last opportunity to make Rick Kamla the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers. I need to remind you, because I'm slipping in the polls. I need to remind you on the We Need to Win ticket that it includes all the sexy, controversial stuff that you love watching on network television dramas. The shows that I don't watch, and you all watch, the huge ratings. Duffel bags full of money and Bagman boosters. Lowered academic standards. To the point where people are just, but they're really good at football. And most important of all, John, heavy emphasis on the volunteer hostess program to entertain recruits. And isn't that what it's all about? So again, at Rick and John 929, vote for Rick Kamla on the We Need to Win ticket. You've got about an hour left.
Yeah, apparently nobody cares because Mark Owens is pulling away with this thing because, once again, he played to the lowest common denominator.
How?
You started talking about back hair,
yeah.
Walmart, and
I
online degrees.
The fans, the Tennessee fans, great again. As the president of the Midday Show, I'm always looking out for the people. And I want to make the people happy. I want to help you improve your hygiene. I want to make sure you don't pee in the Tennessee River anymore. I'm going to put portable
fish enjoy that, though.
I'm going to put, look, mellow yellow. I'm going to put portable showers at the tailgates to help you be hygienic. Now, don't ask me what we're going to do on the field. I have no clue. I don't care. I hope you tank for another 5 years. That helps us out. But for the fans, I want to make your life and your experience better. Tennessee fans have not had it easy over the past couple of years. I'm here for you.
Be honest. Tennessee
you are
fans
not
are
here for them. You're
no, you're
a damn good
you're,
dog.
You're here break. With your big bright red Georgia hoodie on right now.
Again.
Now, would you still wear your Georgia hoodie on the Tennessee sideline?
You know, me and Gretchen talk about that a lot. What would happen if our daughter, we both bleed red and black, what if Caroline got like a full ride to Tech or a full ride to Florida, a full ride to Auburn? Now, being family and you go free college, okay, by God, go, yeah, all right, Georgia Tech, let's go. I would support her 100%, but I would never wear the opposing team's gear.
Here's the thing I say about that all the time. If they're smart enough to get a full scholarship to Georgia Tech, by God, they can get a full scholarship somewhere else. Kane knows Florida and Florida State and Virginia Tech and Notre Dame. You ain't going to those schools.
What if it's a specific program? Like a
find another program.
Biomolecular economic degree.
Nothing in my DNA says bio anything.
You know what?
Biodegradable.
Maybe.
At this point, I just want her to get just a high school diploma. We'll go from there, baby. You got your dad's genes, so just get through high school and we'll move on.
Trying to get Kane through third grade right now.
All right, I've had to adjust the acronym. You remember CCF SWIN, the Caucasian Coalition for Short Wearing in November? I've had to amend that to CCF SWID, the Caucasian Coalition for Short Wearing in December, mm-hmm. because that is what Mark Owens is doing right now. And I joked with Hugh Douglas, who's wearing shorts. He is the only non-Caucasian in Atlanta right now wearing shorts.
By the way, before we let this slide any further, what is this on our desk? You have a pill box with...
This is a 7-pill organizer, John. See, Sunday through Saturday. And in it are vitamins. That
what are
charity...
you, 80?
No, this isn't like Lipitor and like blood thinner and you know, like... I don't know, meds
might
for people
well
who have all kinds of... Anyway, it's like vitamins and stuff like that, and it's like a lot of them. It's like, open up your hand, and you want some Skittles, and no, they're vitamins.
I've been to a buffet listen, that has less items
that? There's a lot of vitamins in there.
That's not... That's like a shaker. I just felt like I was like at a party. Shake that again.
Hold on.
There's a couple of like...
That's a musical
that's
instrument.
That's the vitamin dance right there.
Do you even know what they are?
Nope.
Or did Charity just go, you're taking
nope.
this?
No, she just... She and I mean, but she had to put in some work for this. Look
yeah,
at that. They're
that's
all
good
different
packaging.
Colors and... Yeah. I don't know. She just said...
So
she
that
just
means
said,
at home, you've got the actual bottles that go along with it. You've got like 17 different pill bottles.
The corner of our kitchen. And I'm not a clutter guy, but we've got clutter on the counters of our kitchen. And there's a lot of vitamin
bottles. Yeah, you're that old guy now driving down 75, going 45, left blinker on, listening to NPR, reading the paper, hands can barely look over the wheel. Got to get home because they're having dinner at 4:30.
Pants up around his nipples.
Pants up around these kids in your rock and roll music and your cassette tapes. I tell you what, I got to go up to a full stop on 75. I'm going to take my pills.
Preacher man, how many vitamins do you take?
I take one. It's a multivitamin.
It's a Fred Flintstone, and it's chewable.
What's wrong with that?
Nothing.
That's what Squid takes.
Preacher man, you are definitely going to say what's up to this. Before we get rolling here, I got to give a shout out to Mike. He is a delivery truck driver, and so Charity got some stuff, a big Macy's box yesterday, and I was leaving, and the guy was kind
of
like,
apparently
no, no,
full
no.
of pills.
No. Very heavy. But the guy kind of motioned me to stay, and I was like, all right. And I got out of the truck, and he handed me the big Macy's box, and he said, are you Rick Kamla? And I said, yeah, dude. Hi, how you doing? And he said, I looked at the box, and it said charity on it. And I saw the jet ski, and I'm like, are you Rick Kamla? Are you the guy I listen to on the radio?
That's
and I'm
awesome.
Like, yeah, man, there's the lake. The boathouse is right down there. Yeah, and really, really nice guy, full of love. And so shout out to Mike, man. It's the first time I've been recognized by my wife's first name.
And that's when he said, I've got your Propecia, your Cialis, your Lipitor, your aspirin, your gummy vitamin, your melatonin.
And the diapers.
Because that's what's up.
What the is going on?
The sports world never stops. So if you missed anything, Rick and John are here to tell you what's up.
What's up, Holmes?
I always say I'm never frustrated. You know, it's always you got to find ways to fix things. You know, you can get frustrated and get stuck in your ways and don't want to do this and communicate. Everything is team. Team, team, team. So you got to communicate with each other and understand. And the only way you can fix it is by communicating and keep working towards something.
I mean, I get all what Julio's saying. And obviously Julio, one of the best players in the league, regardless of position. You would think, and I know Julio's always going to say all the right things, just who he is. He's not a guy that's going to be in the media making stupid statements. The Falcons run a very tight-knit organization from the top to the bottom, the communication staff, everything really good. Every now and then I'd like to hear, though, get me the damn ball. Like, just get it to me. I will make a play. And this is a Thursday night where I need Julio to go 7 for $1.60.
All right, John, well, take me to the field last Sunday as Mohamed Sanu apparently was saying, give me the damn ball, and playing the Keyshawn Johnson card. And we saw frequently after Sanu, I didn't see the outburst, but the broadcasters on the TV call were talking about this. Saw him, Sanu saying that and kind of demanding the ball. So tell me what you saw with that.
Yeah, it was a scenario where, you know, these guys, you can see Julio and Muhammad, and really all of them, Devontae, Matt Ryan, when they don't play well or things aren't going their way, they're going to say, get it to me. And Mohamed Sanu is a guy that's got, obviously, a ton of confidence in his own ability. And I think it was Raheem Morris. He said, dude, get me the ball. I can beat this guy. I can beat Trey Wayans. They can't cover me one-on-one. So you had that scenario play out. Unfortunately, they didn't get our receivers the ball enough.
We can move on here. I've got a Twitter poll up right now. Who needs to step up in December for our Falcons? We're going to chop that up in the 10-20 segment with your calls, and we'll tell you how the voting is going. But, John, am I right that I read last night some good news on Brian Poole? Limited in practice, and he's trending towards playing against New Orleans?
Yeah, it looks that way, and that's huge. You know what New Orleans is going to do. They're going to try to find matchups and exploit them. That's going to be Alvin Kamara getting out of the backfield, maybe matched up with a backer. But they also try to take advantage of a lot of times your slot corners. They'll move guys around. Brian Poole's got to be there. And, you know, he was walking around during the game on Sunday, obviously not getting out there and trying to run. I thought when the injury originally happened, it looked like he got kneed in the middle of the back. And that's something that can seize up and bruise and get really tight. Hopefully that means he can get back out there tomorrow.
All right, what's up continues on the Midday Show with Rick and John. And Willie Taggart is now the FSU coach, replacing Jimbo Fisher. And now, of course, the Ducks are in the search for a new coach as the carousel continues to swirl. John, I think Florida State's a big winner in this. It's a soft landing after losing Jimbo. And I thought that the administration needed to kind of give Jimbo what he wanted and needed to play ball with Jimbo. So I'm mad at them. I think Jimbo Fisher should still be the Seminoles coach. But this is a nice plan B for me. I think Taggart is a winner in this. It's definitely an upgrade from Oregon to FSU. Losers are Oregon. And also, John, I believe the team that loses their coach to the Ducks will be a loser in this because the little openings are going to continue to happen here.
Yeah, Willie Taggart, a guy that's got South Florida ties, wanted to go back home. You know, reading some of the stuff yesterday, he said it was a really tough decision because he's actually got a really good team coming back to Oregon a year from now. And if Justin Herbert hadn't been hurt, they might have been a 9 or a 10-win team this past year. But you're going back to Florida State. You're going to a place where you can win legitimately national championships. He allegedly, and I don't think Jim Leavitt can make it official that he's leaving Oregon, wants to bring his defensive coordinator, Jim Leavitt, who used to also coach at South Florida, an uber-aggressive guy. They may not win it next year, but they're going to start making steps back in the right direction with Willie Taggart. They're going to be a little more spread on offense, and with Jim Leavitt coming, they're going to be uber aggressive on defense.
Let me ask you a potentially stupid question. Mike Leach's name came up with the Tennessee search. I don't know if he signed an extension or whatever with Washington State, so give me that info if that's happened, John. But is Mike Leach to Oregon insane, or is it genius?
I just don't know if he would leave in conference to go a place where you play in division. For Mike Leach, it's a step up. No disrespect to Washington State. Good program. Oregon still holds a higher, you know, higher cachet in the pecking order when it comes for Mike Leach. I don't believe he has signed anything as of yet because his name is still popping up. If you're Oregon, do you call Lane Kiffin?
Yes. That's a good call. But, John, when I think Oregon, I think 45 points, 52 points.
Yeah, but that's Lane Kiffin.
No. But what I'm saying is both of those guys fit that profile. If I'm Oregon, I'm trying to keep that identity. I don't want a Jim Harbaugh type yards in a cloud of dust with no quarterback play. I want a swashbuckling head coach that's going to gamble and take chances and light up the scoreboard. So I like to Kiffin call.
How about Kevin Sumlin as well?
We'll see if Leach gets a call. I'm not a Sumlin guy. I think he's too nice of a guy. Maybe that works in Oregon. But I think the Oregon fan base wants to get to 10, 11, 12 wins, John, and get back to the playoff. And I don't think Sumlin is that guy.
I think in Oregon he can. You're winning 8 in the SEC West. The Pac-12 North, not quite the SEC West. That talent out there. Kevin Sumlin's going to sling it all over the yard, and he'd have no pressure.
Dude, I totally get that he could get the talent. I don't trust him to turn that talent into a big-time winner.
See how that works out. Arkansas actually hired their coach yesterday, Chad Morris, former Clemson OC, went to SMU to get his head coaching, you know, feet wet. Now he's got a head job at Arkansas.
Am I right that he had a huge part to do with Clemson's
Absolutely.
Ascent under Dabo Sweeney? So
yes.
He deserves a lot of credit for that, right? So this is a good hire.
Yeah, it's a good hire. Now we'll see the step up going from SMU to Arkansas, a little bit different. We'll see how Chad Morris handles that. So jobs are starting to get filled. Lo and behold, Tennessee. Well, they still don't have a head coach. The latest rumor there, Jeremy Pruitt, Alabama's defensive coordinator, getting some love. Mel Tucker apparently got a second interview. We'll see how that plays out.
Look, it'd be good for Mel Tucker to get great for Mel Tucker to get this job. I'd like to see Georgia stay whole. I'd like to see T. Martin get that job, or as you said, Jeremy Pruitt.
Yeah, unfortunately, when you win, people come pillage your coaching staff. Hey, let's move on. A couple other things basketball related. Hawks, they'll be back in action tonight taking on your Orlando Magic.
No, John, they're there. Orlando Magic. Hawks and Magic, they got a little home and home right here, and we gave you the lottery standings yesterday, and our Hawks are right where they need to be. They're number two behind only the super cruddy Chicago Bulls. The other night I'm watching hoops, and I see Steph Curry turn his right ankle, and I'm like, because he landed on a foot, and it was a full roll, and I was like, that's a 2 to 4 week injury. And I love trying to guess the medical report and then seeing how it comes out. He's out at least 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It looked like a month or to me, John.
Yeah, and this is a scenario. Well, now it means Kevin Durant will step up and Klay Thompson will step up. They'll be fine. It's what the Warriors do. We take a break. We come back. Who needs to step up for the Falcons in December? Because the playoffs, let's be honest, they start tomorrow. That's all coming up next on the Midday Show with Rick and John. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
It's really different, you know, just from a visual standpoint. I mean, just your sight lines and those kind of things are a little bit different. It is different, unique, having people behind you on the sidelines. They never stop. But, you know, it's cool. I mean, it's a great experience for those fans to be that close to the live action, and I've really enjoyed playing in it.
Matt Ryan talking about the Benz, and that's going to be a topic of discussion, continue to be a topic of discussion here on the Midday Show with Rick and John. And, John, right now as we come to the people live from the Kia studios, I've got dueling polls. I got a poll in one hand and I got a poll in the other.
Okay.
On Twitter, that is. We got a poll up right now. At Atlanta Falcons fans, who needs to step up their game the most in December? Matt Ryan, defense getting takeaways, Dan Quinn, or fans at the Benz? Okay, so I gave you a nice multi-layered, multiple-choice question. John, which of these do you think is winning right now?
Matt Ryan.
Correct. Ding, 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 ding. 53% say Matt Ryan. 25% say fans at the Benz. 14% say defense getting takeaways. And 8% say Dan Quinn. Now, the other poll, as we continue with the dueling polls theme for this segment, is the all of us trying to be the Tennessee head coach. This is the closest voting we have ever had when all four of us have been put on the line here. MO is in the lead right now, 29%. Make fans great again. I'm second, 26%. We need to win. John, I know football, 24%. And the preacher man, I'm the only adult, which is the funniest of the four slogans, 21%. How about that? We're separated, all of us, by 8%.
That's pretty good.
That's never happened.
No, normally it's a runaway for one of us, and the rest of the other three are just kind of pulling up the rear in that scenario.
Look, if you want your morals thrown out the door and you want parties with drugs and escorts and bags of cash, then Rick Kamla is your
man. Hold on. We never said the D word, M.O. Oh, that was you. No, you're trying to mudsling me. We don't involve with drugs.
Says
we
the guy with a pillbox full of 500.
That's right.
If
you prove
vitamins,
anything,
M.O.
you've got
it in. That's
what
you say.
And that's
they're
what I meant.
They're not edibles. They're vitamins.
That's what I meant. I meant the drugs that'll keep you happy and healthy
yeah,
and your blood pressure low.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you want. Rick Campbell is your man.
You guys can call 404-741-0929. We'll ask the question, who does need to step up the most in December for the Atlanta Falcons? I knew Matt Ryan would be the answer because for fans, it's easy to go, it's all on Matt. Matt sucks. I mean, we heard that last year going into the season, and then he went out and had an MVP year. He is not playing at an MVP level. But for the last 6-7 weeks, Matt Ryan has actually played well. This, Minnesota was a struggle. The entire offense struggled in that. So I would make it, for me, simple. The offense has to get back to what happened in Seattle against Dallas, against the Jets. You need to go to that. The defense is doing their part. This was never going to be the 85 Bears. We talked all summer that this could become a top 10 defense. Statistically, it is a top 10 defense. The offense not holding up their end of the bargain. You've got a lot of money invested into Devontae, Julio, Muhammad, Matt. I think as a group, this unit needs to step up.
John Michaels is on the field for the games. He's a part of the broadcast crew, the Falcons Radio Network. You're going to hear tomorrow night's game right here. John will be there with Wes Durham and Dave Archer on the call. And I heard John Fricke saying this morning. I want to drop it on you right now. If you're going to the game tomorrow, bring a toy. They want an unwrapped toy for the Toys for Tots thing, which is just a great, great cause. Because believe it or not, even that silly little Lego toy that never gets played with in the corner, that may make the Christmas for a kid. You just don't understand how the difference is between what you got and what some other people don't. We got people living under bridges. We got people like putting out their hand for a $5 bill or a $1 bill at the side of the road, man. So help your fellow man. Right. And by the way, this poll that we're talking about is at NBA TV Rick, the Falcons poll.
Glad you said that about the toy situation. I always have our kids go through stuff that, you know, let's be honest, Santa Claus has brought Christmas gifts for them, and they may not use them because they like the other gifts better. Give them to somebody else. And I've taught all of our kids, hey, you have it pretty good here. Not going to lie to you. You live a hell of a lot better than I did as a child. And it's nothing against my mom. It's just a different day and age. But appreciate what you have and realize that there are kids. There might be kids you go to school with that don't have the stuff that you do.
Just saying, man. So think about the kids that literally, I mean, just the how sad is that? A kid going Christmas, you know, without any gifts, man. And just a stuffed animal. Whatever it is, a little wind-up toy, whatever it is, it could really make a difference for a kid. Toys for Tots at the game tomorrow night at the Benz. Okay, here's my answer to this. The poll at NBA TV, Rick. Who needs to step up their game the most in December for our birds? I think it's the fans at the Benz. Playing quarterback in the NFL is one of the toughest things to do in professional sports. It's like hitting a 95-mile-an-hour curveball. It's like, you know, hitting a 375-yard drive on 18 in a one-hole, you know, match. It's one of the most difficult things to do. Let's look at the other stuff. Dan Quinn, he's got a scheme against Ron Rivera and Sean Payton and all these guys. Our defense has to go up against, in the next 3 weeks, John, Drew Brees and the Saints offense.
Mm-hmm.
Have fun with that. So of these four, who has the easiest challenge?
The fans.
It's the fans at the Benz. All you have to do is get lathered up, and if you're 21 and older and you have an Uber ride, get a little saucy. This is Thursday night with the Saints in town. Foam at the mouth. Scream and yell. Now, don't create a profanity situation where you get tossed out of the game or create a fight, but make – John, let's start here. Make noise on third down.
Yeah,
Just start there. You know, so it's first and 10 for the New Orleans Saints at the 25-yard line after a kickoff that went for a touchback. You don't have to be crazy on first and 10. If you want, that's great. Third and 8, I'm going to need you on Thursday night. Let's just start with third down, John.
Yeah, that would be awesome. You know, I will never tell another person how to spend their money. All of our bank accounts are different. Rick's different than mine, different than Paul's, different than Mark. We all have different amounts in our account. We have different amounts that we have to pay. Disposable income is different for me than it may be to somebody else. There's a lot of people who have a hell of a lot more money than I do. My thing is, if you spent money to get in the building, be part of it. You know, okay, get to the Benz an hour and a half early. Walk around. Go see what you want to see. Go into a restaurant. Get the brisket grilled cheese. Do whatever it takes to go. When the game starts, sit down and watch and scream and cheer. That's all we ask. If your company bought the PSLs between the 20s and they give it to Jimmy in accounting who doesn't like football and he doesn't show up, well, shame on your business. You know what? You spent the money. That's great. The tickets are bought. But if you're in there, be part of it.
This has been sort of a dirty little secret, an elephant in the room. And, John, early in the season, I saw it at the Packer game. First regular season home game. The crowd in the second half wasn't even close to good enough. Mm-mm. Wasn't even in their seats. I was like, this is the Packers. Game one. Super Bowl, ascent here. What the heck? So, but I didn't want to, call out fans and hit the panic button and all this kind of stuff. It's game one and it's a brand new stadium and it's probably a little bit politically incorrect to criticize that in any way, shape, or form, especially the timing of it, the unveiling and all that. But it's a problem. Mm-hmm. We've been talking about it for weeks, John. Dukes and Bell have been talking about it. We talked about it with them yesterday. Now others are talking about the lack of fan involvement at the Dome.
I went through, I'd see somebody put a tweet about Mercedes-Benz Stadium, and then I'd go underneath to read the comments because you can get an idea of the pulse of people. And there's a percentage of fans, this team isn't giving me nothing to cheer about. Well, I'm going to back up. The team was 3-0 to start the year, and Buffalo came to town, and there was 10,000 empty seats. Okay, you're 3-1 the following week, and Miami comes to town, and there were 12,000, 15,000 Dolphin fans in the building. You were still in the top of the league at that point. So, I hate that lazy. They're not giving us anything to cheer about. Coming off a Super Bowl, and I know they lost the Super Bowl. There's 30 other teams in the league that would have loved to have lost the Super Bowl as opposed to losing their final game somewhere before that. So there's a lot of excuses out there, whatever it may be. I think everything needs to be better.
Yeah, but you have to understand, like I said with the third down thing, okay, so even if your team hasn't necessarily made a play, that's your time, fans. Or let's say Bosher punts it and it's down at the 2-yard line. And it's first and 10 Saints at their 2-yard line. Like right up against the end zone.
Mm-hmm.
You as a fan, that is your cue to get nuts and crazy. It's happened for decades in the NFL. That fans don't need on the Jumbotron to
get
say
loud.
Make noise or get loud. You should know the other team is in a bad spot.
Mm-hmm.
We could maybe get a defensive touchdown here if we're loud or a false start or something, a safety, anything. Come on, man. You can make a difference.
Let me also say this, and I know I've seen this on a lot of reaction from people. Hey, they priced me out of the building. I'm not talking to you guys because you know what? I know the fans that were in the Georgia Dome last year that said, hey, I can't afford this anymore. That goes back to my whole thing about whatever's in your pocket's in your pocket. If you can't afford it, it sucks. I hate the fact that there are some real fans that may have got priced out of the building for corporations to go in and buy up a lot of these seats. I'm calling out the people that are in there that are milling around. They're too worried about the TVs over here. I get all the stadium is unbelievable. We will be broadcasting from there tomorrow at 10 o'clock. I love Mercedes-Benz Stadium. But when the game's there, aren't we there for the game? Isn't that the main attraction? Everything else is kind of the preliminaries.
I think people look at it like they look at an election.
Mm-hmm.
Why would I vote? My vote's not going to matter. My vote's not going to change the election. Me sitting on my stands and making noise isn't going to have an outcome on this game. Yes, it is. Didn't the lady, Keisha, who won the mayoral race last night, I thought I read on Twitter she won by 579 votes.
Yeah, something like that.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah, your
every
vote matters.
Every vote matters, and every time you scream matters at the Benz.
We'll take a couple of calls at 404-741-0929. Who needs to step up the most in December for the Falcons? Also, Slice of Life coming up next. What are the most unrealistic movie scenes of all time? Oh, I've got a great list here. That's next. Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
What's up, dog?
Not much, dog. What's up with you?
I'm here to pick up Casey, you know what I'm saying?
What's your name, man?
Scotty P, you know what I'm saying?
Hey, those are cool tats, man.
Oh, for real? Thank you, bro. You see the cobra?
Yeah, what is this one?
Oh, this?
Uh-huh.
That's my credo. No regrets.
Mm-hmm. You have no regrets?
Dad?
Nope.
Like, not even a single letter?
No way. Not me.
Well, I love them.
So what's your go-to drink?
Sounds like you guys fancy yourself drinkers, huh?
When was your last fist fight?
I'm gonna kick your...
Who really wears the pants in the family?
Nah.
Rick and John prove adulting is tough.
It's worse than we thought.
The Slice of Life on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game.
All right, we love this segment, and we know you love it, too, on the Midday Show with Rick and John, live from the Kia Studios. It's The Slice of Life, and it's brought to you by Shane Company, who wants you to blow her mind and not your budget with an engagement ring from Shane Co., your friend in the jewelry business. John, where does today's slice slice come from?
I was at home last night, watched a little bit of basketball, and it was like 11:30, and I happened to flip over, and one of the channels had Teen Wolf on, like the original movie. I said, oh, I got to watch this. One of the classics. Now, Urania looks at me like, this movie sucks. I'm like, no, Teen Wolf was awesome in the 80s. It's not so awesome in 2017.
So this is the movie with Michael J. Fox leaping horizontal to the ground through the air for massive Shaq dunks. That movie.
So where this question come from, what is the most unrealistic scene of all of movies? The basketball scenes in that movie are the worst basketball scenes ever shot in cinema. First of all, Michael J. Fox is what, like 5'4"? They used the same layup scene like pretty much the entire movie, because I guess it's the only time he actually made a layup. You had the super fat guy in the spandex Adidas jersey shooting like push button jumpers from the head of the key.
He looked like you in Deshaun Tate's shirt.
Exactly. It's exactly what he looked like. It's the worst basketball scenes I've ever seen. And then when he turns into the Wolf, he's like doing all these acrobatic dunks. And I mean, it's so pathetic. Like they weren't even trying with those basketball scenes. So I asked the question, what are the most unrealistic scenes in all the movies?
You told me you got a long list, dude. I got like three or four here. Not a real long list for me.
I've got about four or five.
Hit me.
The Fast and Furious movie where they jump the car from one building to the other.
I got that one written down, Preacher Man.
Yeah.
And then the other?
Yeah, and then the other.
Two high rises.
The car doesn't crash at all, though. It just goes right through the glass, perfectly lands, and they happen to land on a floor where they don't take out anybody. It's just unbelievable. The triple Lindy in the movie Back to School. You mean to tell me 77-year-old Rodney Dangerfield's getting up there, bouncing from one diving board to the other? That's so unrealistic. And you can see it's so different. You can see the stunt double's body, and you go, dude, that's not Rodney Dangerfield. That's some in-shape guy with a wig on. So that one's pretty unrealistic.
Well, that, and you can see the wig flopping in the air.
Yeah. How about any of the fight scenes in Rocky 4 or 3? Ivan Drago is like 8 times the size of Rocky. He pummels him from pillar to post, and now suddenly at the end of the movie, Rocky is just unbelievable. I love the Rocky. Those four, the first four were great. Those are horrendous. And then Teen Wolf, the basketball scene to me, is absolutely the worst. That's the worst sports scene in the history of movies.
I can't disagree with that, dude. Really good stuff right there. All right, you guys have heard me complain about this scene in this movie before. Independence Day. Will Smith punches an alien and kills him with one punch. It's the most unrealistic thing that's ever happened in cinema.
Will Smith's got them hands, though.
John, as we continue our slice of life here, most
unrealistic. Oh, boys! I'm back!
Really, total side note here. Did you hear that? That's Randy Quaid. Did you hear he might be running for president in 2020?
That's awesome.
Is he allowed back in the country?
I don't know.
Is he American? I don't even know. But Will Smith punching out an alien in Independence Day. Also, I would also put this, the most unrealistic casting of all time is Bill Pullman, the king of the chick flick as the president of the United States. All right, John, let's move on here. I've got two more. Craig knocking out Debo at the end of Friday. One of the most unrealistic scenes I have ever seen. And I wanted it to happen badly. We all did. But come on, man. In real life, Craig gets his brains beat in by Debo.
The payback's a mother, ain't it?
And lastly, I realized that this was a reenactment of a true story. The life of Tupac, All Eyes on Me. Good flick. Saw it recently. How in the H does Tupac take all 50 bullets and Suge Knight takes none sitting right next to him?
No.
So not only an unrealistic scene in a movie, but an unrealistic occurrence in real life. I just don't understand how that happens.
Yeah, but Suge got grazed by a bullet, so take that for what it's worth.
So, in other words, anyway, I probably said too much. He's still behind bars,
Suge's
right?
Suge's never getting out of jail.
Okay, good, because he may be coming after me for what I just said.
There's always been rumors that was an inside job, if you know what I'm saying. Mark Owens, most unrealistic scenes in any movie.
As someone who survived a tornado, the movie Twister,
that's so
you
ridiculous.
Can't drive a Dodge Ram through a house and a tornado at the same time.
How about the end of the movie where they've got a belt strapped to a small pipe and they go through a Cat 5 tornado? Come on, dude.
And she just has her come to Jesus moment as she's looking up going, it all comes together now.
Is that Bill Paxton in that movie?
That's Paxton.
Yeah. And she goes, I love Bill Paxton. He's got me here in the middle of a cornfield in Nebraska or Oklahoma or what other place in the middle of the United States I am.
And Dorothy 2 finally worked.
Emo, can I please insert this real quick? What was the movie? What was it? San Andreas? So the Rock's daughter has to hold her breath for 17 and a half minutes underwater, and he finds her at a needle in a haystack.
Yeah, I was going to say, how about him with the little skipper boat going through this massive earthquake?
That is funny you say that. That's on my list.
No way, I'm sorry,
San Andreas, right here
at
the top.
I'm sorry.
Because that entire movie, what kills me the most is not only does Rock save the world, entire L.A., the whole state of California, millions and millions and millions of people are dead. At the very end of the movie, he stands up with his ex-wife. And, of course, during all this destruction and disaster, they realize they do love each other.
Mm-hmm,
Their kid is perfectly fine.
And the daughter got a boyfriend out of it.
But, yeah, it's such a happy family among mass carnage. And the stupid part of the very end of the movie, what do we do now? We rebuild. What the what?
Yeah, Rock.
Lost your mind.
Yeah, vote for Rocket 20, whatever you
That is a definition of CGI porn. That's all that movie was.
Wow.
Yeah, and they're going to make a sequel, too.
Of course they
are. Enough people paid over $100 million. The Hangover 3.
That's the worst movie ever made. That movie was crap.
Number 3, there's a scene where Ed Helms is driving the limo, trying to catch Leslie mm-hmm. Chow, who's in the parachute, driving, weaving in and out of the strip. You know, in the middle of the night. Let me tell you something. If you've ever been to Vegas, you're not going more than about 3 miles an hour.
You're not weaving anywhere.
You're not weaving on the strip on a moped. You're not driving a limo in and out. And finally, I want to say Happy Gilmore. I've tried that swing. It doesn't work.
It doesn't work.
It never works.
I've hit myself more than I've actually hit the ball when I try that swing. Preacher Man, most unrealistic scenes in movies.
Let's go with Weird Science. Creating Kelly LeBrock by feeding magazine articles into a computer and then tapping into, you know, NORAD or whatever, the database.
Yeah,
and
we
know,
all tried.
They had bras on their heads.
That's what made it happen.
I put my ColecoVision up to that National Geographic. I tried.
What else you got, Paul?
That's a good one, Preacher Man.
Well, how about the car jumping scene in Gone in 60 Seconds when he's on the bridge and the ambulance and everything's backed up? He puts it in reverse, and all of a sudden he's flying. He uses the car trailer as the ramp, and mm-hmm. coming down the other side, and he clips the ambulance. You know, come on now.
You would know. You're the action movie guy. Any unrealistic scenes in a John Wick movie?
What's?
Oh yeah. But I give John Wick credit. At least he reloads. He does change guns. I hate those movies.
Like Rambo, where he had an
Rambo
unlimited
never clip. Never ran out of ammunition, nor did he ever change his magazine.
The opening credits to the end credits, that's the unreal. I got one for an action movie. The Bourne Identity was on last night. I think it was on FXX, and it's the one with Jeremy Renner in it. Not Matt Damon, but it was their
Matt
spinoff.
Damon.
Yeah, I gotta boycott that one.
It was bad. But there's a scene where they're trying to find him in an airport, and they go, I need the footage from LAX, from LaGuardia, from Atlanta. I need from McCarran. I need every footage from every airport in America, and I need it now.
And they find him immediately.
Do you know how long it would take to get 20 minutes of footage from Atlanta alone?
By the way, and I want to add another one from the Fast and Furious. Do you remember the end? I think it was Fast and Furious 6. Where the airplane's about to take off.
Oh, yeah.
And they've got this giant fight scene in the back of a plane that literally is 25 minutes.
The longest runway in history.
Yeah, the runway was from here to McDonough on Friday in rush hour. And they're fighting and scrapping, and guys are hanging out of the back of this giant jet. 20-minute fight scene on a runway. Dude, come on, get your timing right.
What was the earthquake movie with John Cusack in it, where he's driving and the earth is crumbling, 2012, and the earth is crumbling as he's driving, and didn't he have to, like, leap out of a car into a plane away or something?
I think it was another limo jump over a broken highway.
I got one more. The Day After Tomorrow, where Bill Paxton again walks from Philadelphia to New York City in the coldest weather in the history of the world.
That was Jeff Daniels. No, not Jeff Daniels. It was Randy Quaid.
Dennis, no, it wasn't Randy Quaid.
Yeah, it was the Quaid brother.
Was it?
Yeah, from Day After Tomorrow.
You know what? You're right. It was
one.
Because he gets such the dramatic face.
Yeah.
And he's putting so much effort
and again,
grimace into it.
The temperature outside is like literally freezing everything, yet he, because he had on a ski mask and tennis rackets on the bottom of his feet, he could walk all the way there. That was Emmy Rossum pre-Shameless, so she was all innocent and nice. Not anymore. Take a break. We come back. Pete Futek, college football news. We'll break down what happened in the playoffs. Who do we think is going to win and all of that next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
What's your prediction for the fight, Ben? Prediction?
Yes, prediction.
Pain.
Dukes and Bell, afternoons 2 to 7.
Orin has this
11 a.m. in the ATL, and you're listening to Rick and John on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
We roll on from the Kia Studios on a Falcons Wednesday, I guess. I mean, tomorrow's the game. We're counting down. It is of the must-win variety for sure. It is of the death game variety. Rick and John here on the home of the Falcons, excited for tomorrow night's tilt against them Saints. The Hoodats are going down, y'all. John's going to be on the field. Wes Durham and Dave Archer up in the booth with the call with the Falcons Radio Network. And in just a moment, we're going to bring on Pete Butek of College Football News. Preacher Man, do we have him right now? We have Pete on the WadeFord.com hotline. Hey, Pete, good morning, man. Thanks for talking some college football with Rick and John here in Atlanta.
What's going on down there?
We're chilling, man. We're excited about all of the rankings, and now we get the bowl matchups and all that jazz. But I want to go back to, Saturday and all the fantastic games. And I'm thinking about Ohio State right now. And John and I both agreed that Alabama should have been 4 and Ohio State should have been 5. Do you agree with me that really the failures of Ohio State not to truck Wisconsin, losing to Iowa, that was more the reason they were left out than anything Alabama did?
Yeah, I think. I mean, at the end of the day, it's kind of hard to argue against the whole, it's Alabama. I mean, the argument one way is if this was an Alabama, if we're talking Iowa State or Utah or Northwestern with the exact same resume and the exact same season that Alabama has, not a chance it gets in. Alabama doesn't have the resume. So however we want to argue on any, they don't have it, especially compared to Ohio State. Ohio State, and here's kind of the problem with this whole thing. It's nothing against Alabama as a team or anything like this. But according to the College Football Playoff Committee's own rankings, their own belief, Ohio State beat three teams better than anything that LSU beat. So between being Wisconsin, Penn State, Michigan State, all ranked ahead of LSU. And then they say, well, we kind of like the eye test. Well, Alabama just wasn't that great according to the eye test. I mean, they struggled against mediocre Texas A&M and OK Mississippi State. Now, I mean, this is a good season and a good team, but there's nothing there that says, oh, yeah, Alabama should be in this, especially compared to last year's Ohio State team, which had three top, five wins at the end of the day. So it's hard to argue for Alabama. And I think when it came down to it, they were just like, oh, that Iowa game. It just, you can't get past that. The two losses and the Iowa game. But I agree with you to a point. If they blew out Wisconsin, it would have been a harder argument to make. My biggest overall issue is that this whole college football playoff, the rigmarole each week, all the dog and pony show of the rankings and stuff, it turned out to be kind of mean. I mean, they say Kirby Holcutt comes out and says there's no real difference between 5 and 8. And then 8 goes out and beats the undefeated number 4 team in the country, wins the Big Ten championship, and nah.
Does that lead you to believe, Pete, that a couple of years down the road we can get it to 8 then if 5 and 8 don't really matter and the fact that you can win a conference 2 years in a row and the Big Ten's been left out, do you see them expanding this anytime?
Now, there's two ways to look at this. One, they don't think like that. I think the philosophy is more like, this is why we have a committee to decide between 4 and 5 and to decide which team is more worthy. And so this is the whole purpose of this committee is for exactly what just happened, as opposed to saying, well, this is a tough call. We had to go one way or another. Let's just make this thing bigger. But to your point, the big key to this point is the Big Ten got hosed. So as soon as you get the biggest, everyone thinks, the SEC is big. No, the Big Ten's the biggest of the conferences. Is in terms of just sheer reach and money and power and the whole thing. The Big Ten and Jim Delaney, those are the biggest bad boys on the block. And now they've gone 2 straight years without their champion getting in. Now, it's one thing for them not to get their champion in, but Ohio State getting in last year. Now they're out of this thing entirely. So if that happens again, then I think you see some real saber rattling there and say, all right, enough of this. We can't go a college football playoff without, one of the two best conferences in the country not being represented.
We always love having Pete Butek on. He brings it, and he's got some really big college football opinions. And I'm on your Twitter page right now. Give Pete a follow, at Pete Butek, F-I-U-T-A-K. The picture you have behind here, you've got a picture of yourself, and then it says, your favorite band sucks. And Pete, I got to tell you, I've had that T-shirt for about 20 years. It was made by The Onion.
the you know, the farcical satirical newspaper. Anyway, like it's and that tells me you're a music fan, right? Like, and so,
well,
so
not only a music fan, but really quick side note, really boring side note. I went to Wisconsin. I was there when the Onion started. Right, it happened right in the little complex down below my freshman year dorm, and I had a chance to work there. And at the very beginning, I'm like, nah, you know, I'm just going to write for the school newspaper. This little Onion thing's cute, but I don't think there's any future in it. I don't think anything's going to happen with there. So good luck with all of that.
And how'd that work out?
Career and life. Yeah, that.
Wait a second. You're the publisher of College Football News. You're balling, bro.
I am, of course. I'm not whining too much. But at the end of the day, that'd be kind of sweet to be, you know, in on the ground floor with the Onion. So anyway, that's a little life choice with out there, but it turned out all right.
Yeah, and we enjoy having you. We enjoy reading your work all the time. Pete Futak with us here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Let's talk about the matchups. And I know it's early. We got a month to go. Start right here, Georgia and Oklahoma. Georgia with a great defense. Oklahoma with a great offense. Who has the advantage when it comes to the two positives of both teams?
The thing to remember about all this is that the time, and that all the coaches keep saying, is the difference between the teams that are at the end of the long regular season and the beginning of the college football playoff is night and day. And, you know, Saban said it the last 2 years. He's like, look, you know, yeah, we were better than Michigan State and Washington, but you saw how that Alabama team just looked different. It just was fresher. It was better. He might have struggled a little bit against Washington, but that team wasn't having any problems. And then against Clemson, you just say, oh, I mean, Deshaun Watson, that team's great, but that team just didn't – they're still, you know, tired again because all of a sudden you start playing again. I think that having time off is going to matter in a big way. It stunk for Auburn, for example, to be so banged up in that game. I think it stunk a little bit for Georgia, too, because that team looked a little weary. I think after a month, you're going to see a much different Georgia team. And I always think defense over offense when you have time to prepare – this Oklahoma team might be special. Mayfield's going to win the Heisman, but I think Georgia's winning this and going back to make it for a whale of a game out there in your city.
I mean, I totally agree, and that's my assessment on it as well. I love Baker Mayfield. I think he's a sure first-round pick. I think he's a franchise QB in the NFL.
That's a little much. I don't know if he's that good, but, yeah, he's in this class.
But, Pete, how can you take shots? He's got elite feet. He's got a brilliant mind. He can read defenses. He can throw the big ball. He can throw with touch. He can throw it through a wall if he needs to. I don't think there's a weak. I don't think he has a weakness. Do we have Pete, or did I bore him to hanging up on us?
I don't know. Pete just said, "I'm out."
What just happened?
I'm gone.
I was just trying to have a little friendly debate with Pete Futak, the publisher of College Football News.
What you did here?
Damn! I just hijacked the whole segment with a quick hot take. I will lukewarm my take next time.
Yeah,
anyway, I'm a big Baker Mayfield guy as he projects to the next level. I really am. Do we have Pete? Pete, I thought that I bored you to hanging up on us. What the heck, man?
Oh, I did. These phones nowadays, these kids and their phones. I apologize for that. Yes.
No, I was. Go ahead,
you're
Pete.
Going off on Georgia, and you were saying that yes, it's the with the Baker Mayfield, the first round draft pick might be a little much, especially in this draft. He doesn't have the measurements. You know, he's just not that big a guy, but certainly he's one of those guys who's probably going to hang around. He's going to be, and forgetting the outside parts of Johnny Manziel, he's going to be that polarizing quarterback, probably the level of Manziel in terms of the football types who are trying to analyze this stuff.
Let's look at the other matchup, Clemson-Alabama for the third time, this time not for a national championship, but for a chance to get in the game. I was at the ACC championship game on Saturday night. That Clemson team is good up front, as I've seen, especially on the defensive line in a long time. Can they slow down Alabama like they did a year ago when it mattered?
The difference is, can they do this without the dude? I mean, the last 2 years, I mean, at the end of the day, Clemson had Deshaun Watson and Alabama didn't. So that defensive line's amazing. Alabama's offensive line is amazing. Again, the time off. I kind of want to see if Alabama's just better now. If they're just play better, play stronger. The problem is this offense just can't seem to score. It's been fine, but they have kind of a problem putting teams away. The defense has been good enough. But you're right. This defensive line is incredible. And it is amazing. Because remember, 3 years ago, they lost everybody, like Vic Beasley and everyone else to the NFL. It's like, oh, well, Clemson's going to reload. It has, you know, need a while to rebuild this thing. They go to the national championship, lose a bunch of players again. Now it's going to take a little while. Now then they win the national title, and now they're even better this year. It's absolutely amazing what Dabo Swinney has done.
Pete Futek, outspoken. We love this guy. Publisher of College Football News. Give him a follow on Twitter, at Pete Futek, F-I-U-T-A-K. Rodney Anderson, star running back of the Oklahoma Sooners, is facing a rape allegation. There's a hearing on December 18th. Do you have perspective on this, Pete? Do you know more than just the facts that have been widely reported? And do you think that Rodney Anderson will play in the semifinal game?
I don't know anything super specific other than the fact that they're denying everything categorically, that the lawyers, Rodney Anderson, is like, this never happened, nothing like this. The problem of this is, you know, well, twofold. One, when you've got, you know, the Time, you know, person of the year is the outspoken woman. And it just, in this culture, in this environment, this is not the time to have any allegations against you of any sort and hope that you're going to be on the right side of this in terms of public opinion. And secondly, Oklahoma just got over the Joe Mixon situation. I mean, whatever you think about how this was handled, Oklahoma legitimately and sincerely tried to do the Joe Mixon thing the right way. Again, no matter how you think about it, they tried to do this the best way possible. Obviously, it blew up in a public relations standpoint when the video came out. And the last thing that school is going to want to deal with is another case where it looks like they didn't quite handle it the right way, especially considering it was just 1 year ago when they went through all this. So my total guess is that unless there's anything that absolutely comes out that says he's clear and there's no problems, I would guess he doesn't play in this. But again, that's just total speculation.
Pete, let me ask you, obviously the playoffs are huge, but the other big news this time of the year is the coaches moving around and all that stuff. Who's had the best hire so far in the college carousel?
It doesn't seem to excite the base. I kind of like Dan Mullen to Florida. I think that's one of those hires that right guy, right time. What he was able to do in Mississippi State, I mean, Bulldog fans hate this kind of talking rhetoric. It's not like winning at Iowa State, for example, but in the SEC West, it's not that far off. I mean, that's not a program that's easy to win at on a consistent basis. And for him to do what he did and be the guy who helped create Dak Prescott into an NFL star and help make Nick Fitzgerald into this quarterback who's arguably the best in the SEC before he got hurt. All of a sudden, you've got a guy who now knows how to coach quarterbacks. He knows how to get offenses moving. So it's always interesting to see when a coach like that takes that one next step up. Is he able to go from being a very good coach at a mid-level program to an elite coach at a national championship level? Because now, you know, there's different scrutinizing when it comes to these coaches. And for Mullen, now just being good and 8 wins is not going to be good enough. They're going to demand national championships now, or at least being in the mix, and that's going to be hard now that Kirby Smart's created a juggernaut in Georgia.
That voice belongs to Pete Futek, publisher of College Football News. Check him out, collegefootballnews.com. And, John, you're going to like this. Pete has a tweet out here 19 hours ago. Willie Taggart, ? You're Florida State. You're a superpower. You're a national championship caliber program every year. Don't you want to get a guy who has won something? Anything? And, Pete, I want you to flesh this out here on our air, 92.9 The Game in Atlanta. But John's a huge Hurricane fan, which makes him a huge opponent of the Seminoles. So, Pete, take it away.
My problem is if you're a Florida State, if you're a big-time – now, I know there's money issues there compared to others, but don't you want a guy who has won? Because the problem with Willie Taggart is that he did a great job of building up Western Kentucky to a point. But he didn't win. He didn't win a conference championship. He left before the bowl game. Didn't win. Moved on to South Florida. Took 2 years where I remember writing the article after 2 years being like, wait, this isn't working. And then he built it up a little bit more. Had the one monster year last year. He had the best team in the American Athletic Conference. And they lost the one game they could not lose to Temple. And didn't even go to the American Athletic Conference championship. And then he left before USF went to the bowl game. And then he goes to Oregon, has an okay start against a bunch of bad teams, loses his quarterback, and the offense totally goes into the tank. They get the quarterback back, the schedule gets a little better, and they win a couple more games and looks right again. So, and then he falls up, and then all of a sudden gets this massive contract in the Florida State gig. He's never played in a conference championship game. He's never won a bowl game. You know, so I get the idea of recruiting. I get the idea of, you know, okay, he might be that coach who's on the verge of being great. And it might work. He might, you know, actually, if this is his destination, he sticks around. This might actually work, obviously. But if you're a big-time power, I'm a bigger fan of going after someone who at least has that, you know, rising, you know, resume out there. I still don't know. I know he's going to end up in the NFL. I don't know why everyone's not backing up the truck for David Shaw. You know, I even Justin Fuente, to a point, he seems like he's one of those guys who Virginia Tech's nice, but if he was at Florida State, look out. There's just a lot of good prospects out there, and I'd rather go after a guy who's won something already.
Pete, great stuff. Appreciate it.
Thanks,
we'll catch
Pete.
Up with you down the road.
Anytime, guys.
Thanks a lot. Pete Futak, College Football News. We take a break. We come back. Did Kirby Smart get hosed out of the Coach of the Year Award? Let's break that down next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and 92.9thegame.com.
Seeing Terry Godwin and Roquan Smith hugging on a stage in tears because they care about each other so much. That's why I do this. It's because of these guys. And it's great to bring it back to Georgia, and the Bulldog Nation is certainly starved. But these young men deserve a ton of credit.
Georgia is not where they're at without those seniors coming back. And Kirby, let's be honest, that's not the only reason that you do it. Wads and wads of ones and 20s and lots of cash. Hey, these guys are going to be making a lot of cash on Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
As they bring you College Football Game Time presented by Bud Light at McCray's Tavern in Lawrenceville, about three doors down from where John lives up there in Lawrenceville.
And how far?
Randy McMichael, John Chuckery, Chris Goforth. Apparently John Fricke getting the week off. Maybe just not a big enough Saturday of games for John Fricke.
I'm really, really tired.
Maybe John is big-timing the whole thing. But they're broadcasting live from 11 to 3, again, at McCray's Tavern in Lawrenceville. It is College Football Game Time presented by Bud Light. And we are, proud sponsors, friends, whatever you want to say, with McCray's Tavern.
Yeah.
The Midtown location, and obviously in Lawrenceville. Great people run those places. The food is great. The atmosphere is great. Yada, yada, yada.
Let's take a phone call here at 404-741-0929. I know Bobby's been on hold for a while talking about the Falcons, and I'm sure he'll have an opinion on Kirby Smart not getting Coach of the Year. Bobby, how you doing?
I'm doing great, guys. You know, can't complain. First of all, let me say this. Baker Mayfield, number one quarterback coming out of college.
Whoa, I did not say that. I said Baker Mayfield will be a first-round pick. I would take Darnold over him. I would take Rosen over him. I would take Mayfield, though, over Rudolph and over Jackson, but I did not say number one overall.
Well, I think you said he's a franchise quarterback, which means he's got to be one of the first two quarterbacks picked, and he's not a franchise quarterback, especially in this league when you don't have many quarterback coaches in it that can make guys that way. You know, I think he's a really good quarterback. There are a lot of great quarterbacks come out of college, go to pro, and do nothing, and I think it has more to do with they do not for them as opposed to them themselves. But the other thing is I think you guys are getting it wrong. I think the offensive line and defensive line are the two units on the Falcons I want to see really take it up another level, because if you look at it that way, your running game's going to be good. You're going to be a short and third. Your quarterback's going to be better. Your wide receiver's going to be getting the football. If you can run block and pass protect, Matt Ryan's going to have a good game. The same thing on the defense. If your defensive front is stepping up and getting a lot of hurries and pressures and keeping the other team's running backs to less than 3 yards a carry, you're going to be in pretty good shape.
Great call, Bobby. And you're right. The offensive defensive line for the Falcons do have to step up. I put it on the offense in whole. This team needs to be averaging 28, 29 points a game, period. But the O-line is part of that issue that goes along with it. This week it's going to be Ben Garland instead of Andy Levitre.
All right, Rick and John here, and Bobby, thank you for the call. He's been a great friend of ours, great friend of the station since we came on 5 years ago. Now, back to college football, and I just want to have a healthy conversation about Coach of the Year, because I think coaching in football matters so much at all levels. It is just so important to have a good coach. That's why all these guys are binging around in the coaching carousel right now. And there are many Coach of the Year awards in college football. John, maybe too many, and Mark Richt was named the Walter Camp Coach of the Year. And it just got me thinking, I want to have a conversation about this. Now, this isn't the Coach of the Year Award. That would be the AP Coach of the Year Award. John, you have the
Associated Press, you have the Bobby Bowden National Collegiate Coach of the Year Award, Bobby Dodd Coach of the Year Award, Eddie Robinson Coach of the Year Award, something called the George Munger Award, the Home Depot Coach of the Year Award, the Liberty Mutual Coach of the Year Award.
Nice.
The Paul Bear Bryant Award, the Sporting News College Football Coach of the Year Award, and the Walter Camp Coach of the Year Award. So there's a lot of them. And so Kirby has not lost the main one. So like next year, Nessler and Danielson may still be able to say, and there is reigning Coach of the Year at college football, Kirby Smart. And I think Kirby Smart is the college coach of the year. When you consider the quick culture change he did in a two-year period. So, John, I want to hit you with my top five for Coach of the Year. I think Kirby should be number one. I think Lincoln Riley of Oklahoma should be number two. You think of what he did, and he has Baker Mayfield, and I think that's going to cancel him out in a lot of people's opinion. I think that's incorrect. You lose Mixon, you lose P. Ryan, you lose D.D. Westbrook, you lose all kinds of guys, and the offense has not missed a beat with new running backs, with some new wide receivers, and they've just kept the beat rolling. Now, so and by the way, they won their conference championship, one loss. I've got Mark Richt third because I think he created an amazing turnaround with Miami. Miami was undefeated until they lost two in a row and exhilarated us all year long, and I think Richt deserves a ton of credit, but not more than Lincoln Riley and not more than Kirby Smart. I've got Scott Frost, formerly of UCF, number four. And again, it's a slappy conference that they're in. Dude ran the table, okay? And his offense was the reason they ran the table. And he put Mackenzie Milton up to bat, and Mackenzie Milton made him look great. So that whole thing he deserved. And by the way, wasn't UCF winless 2 years ago?
2 years ago,
okay,
absolutely.
So all that. And then Nick Saban, number five for me. And it feels a little, well, you could give it to him every year. But all of the injuries on defense, you've got really a one-dimensional quarterback. You lose, you know, guys to the draft, whether it's O.J. Howard and Ardarius Stewart and these guys. So I think Nick Saban's number five. What's your top five for Coach of the Year?
I would have Kirby Smart as the Coach of the Year. Georgia was a team that was 7-5 a year ago that played in a bowl game that, quite frankly, nobody cared about. You got, I don't want to say fortunate, but you got some good fortune to get Nick Chubb back, Sony Michel back, all the seniors that stuck around and decided not to go pro. And I think a little bit, you had 8-5 with the bowl game, but they were 7-5 regular season. You also got a little bit fortunate that, and I hate to put an injury on a kid, that Jacob Eason got hurt. Who knows how this season plays out if Jacob Eason is the starter? Maybe you
two or three losses.
Maybe you lose the early game to Notre Dame instead of win it, and all of a sudden you're not here in the playoffs. And Jake Fromm, I argued that you don't lose a job based off injury. I stuck with that. Well, I was wrong. Jake Fromm won the job, and he's going to be the quarterback for the next 3 or 4 years for the Georgia program. I'd have Smart run. I would have Mark Richt number two. All the people that Miami sucks, they're terrible, they're not going to do anything. Mark Richt had him 10-0 and ranked second in the country. Yes, he had the brain fart loss to Pittsburgh. Don't always put that on his feet. Some of it's on him. Some of it's on Malik Rozier, who played dreadful. Clemson's just a better team, period.
John, that was a total team loss.
Yeah.
Okay, let's not pin that on Rozier, who had a bad game. Miami had a bad game that day at Pittsburgh.
You left a guy out that I would have number three, and that's Dabo Sweeney. They were not picked to win their own division, period. 90%, 95% of the people had already penciled Florida State into the ACC championship game. Clemson right now is the number one team in the country and the favorite to go win back-to-back national championships without Deshaun Watson, without Wayne Gallman, without Mike Williams, without all of those guys. They're all gone to the NFL. Ben Bulwer gone to the NFL. They might be better right now minus quarterback, so I have him. Number four, I have Bill Clark, coach of UAB. This program was dead a year ago, like literally didn't exist. They go 8-4 and go to a bowl game with a bunch of transfers and kids that stuck around. And then I do have Lincoln Riley sitting there at number five.
I like the list. Let me go back with you on Dabo Sweeney for just a minute. To me, coach of the year, and we all apply different criteria to these awards and these debates. But to me, coach of the year is about overachieving. And Kirby Smart overachieved in year two to do what he's doing. Riley in Oklahoma certainly overachieved. First year's ahead. He's the youngest college football head coach ever, right? In major Power 5 football. He's got some stat like that. Richt certainly overachieved, I thought, with Miami. Frost overachieved big time at UCF. And Nick Saban, to me, just a little bit overachieved. I'm not mad that you have with all the injuries. I'm not mad that you have Dabo Sweeney in your top five. But did Dabo and his staff really overachieve this year?
I think they did.
You have a defense loaded with future NFL talent. You have, granted, you lost Mike Williams and Jordan Leggett, but you still have Renfro and McLeod and T. Higgins and, of course, Deion Cain. You have
four running backs. You have a stable of running backs. So it didn't really matter that you lost Wayne Gallman and you lose Deshaun Watson and you have Kelly Bryant, who had a marvelous season. But was that like Dabo's coaching or was that just the system and Kelly Bryant running it? So we're splitting hairs here, but I think these other five guys did a better job of overachieving than Dabo Sweeney
did. I think a lot of people predicted Clemson to lose two or three games this year, and now you're 11-1, 12-1. You blew out Miami in the ACC title game. All of everything you said is spot on. Nobody really knew who T. Higgins was going to be. He's a true freshman. Travis Etienne, Tavian Feaster. These are guys that were complete unknowns. And Kelly Bryant, most people thought he wasn't going to win the job because he was just the junior that had stuck around for a while. We knew what the front four was going to be. Lawrence and Wilkins, Bryant and Cleveland Farrell coming off the edge. But you lost Bulware, who was the leader of that defense a year ago. Mackenzie Alexander gone to the NFL. They lost a ton of talent. That's where I think Clemson is now, and the question going into this year, were they a reload or a rebuild team? They're flat out a reload team. If I read correctly, they have six seniors on the team. Now, they're going to lose some kids to the draft. Clemson will be preseason number one. I can tell you that right now.
Interesting. And Trevor Lawrence in the fold.
Yeah, he'll be there. He ain't going to start next year, though. Get ready for a redshirt because Kelly Bryant will be there again. Hey, what's next for Georgia Tech? We're going to ask that question
next. Georgia Tech?
Yeah. I want to talk about them. Not making it to a bowl game. Is it maybe time to make a move? We'll talk about that next.
The game. Rick and John have the latest news from college football and want to hear from you. 404-741-0929. This is the College Football Cheat Sheet on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.
The College Football Cheat Sheet wraps up our College Football Hour each and every day, and it's interactive. Get involved. 404-741-0929. The College Football Cheat Sheet is brought to you by R.S. Andrews. Keep cool. Get an R.S. Andrews Precision AC tune-up. Another way they make you smile at rsandrews.com. What is next for Georgia Tech? Should it include their current head coach, Paul Johnson, who shoves his players onto the field with each play when they have the ball on offense? He shoves them, John. I'm just kidding. He doesn't shove them. He just kind of gives them a little nudge.
Get on
out
boost. There. Go do something.
A little head start on their jaunt out to the field. I mean, my God, are they wearing leather helmets, John? Do they even have face masks?
They do.
He's sending in the play, player by player. And I know he's been doing that for years. I'm just taking like it's an unprovoked shot at Georgia Tech here on a Wednesday morning. We have Dave Archer coming up next, by the way. He won't take a shot at Georgia Tech because, of course, he is Mr. ACC Network.
Here's the thing. I appreciate everything Paul Johnson has done at Georgia Tech. He has had more success at Georgia Tech than really anybody in a long time in the history of that program. So he's done his thing. 11-3 back in 2014, going to an Orange Bowl. We know they've been to the Orange Bowl before. They've been to ACC championship games. All of that good stuff. That's fantastic. Here's the problem. Your last 2 years, you've gone 3-9, 9-4, and 5-6. You've missed bowls two of the last 3 years. You're looking in your conference at Rick now at Miami, Justin Fuente now at Virginia Tech, David Cutcliffe still at Duke. I think Bronco Mendenhall's got Virginia on the ascent. Larry Fedora, your boy, he didn't have a good year, but he had a ton of injuries.
Overrated.
You look over on the other side, Petrino's there. Willie Taggart, we'll see what he's going to end up being. Obviously, Dabo Swinney is the bell cow. Paul Johnson's getting towards the end of his career, and I think Paul will walk away whenever he wants to walk away. Nobody's going to force him out. But I know, and I saw this especially during the end of the Georgia game, a lot of Tech fans really aggravated that you lost to a bad Tennessee team this year, that you blew a fourth-quarter lead to Miami, a game that they felt that they had won. Do you feel something needs to change? Paul's safe. Paul's not going anywhere. But does he need to make some changes on his staff?
I mean, sure. Yeah. I mean, lower academic standards. Get some, you know, dumber players there who are way better ball players. And Tech does pretty good, John. Dude, I would last – John, I need to phrase this question the right way because smart people are listening, and I have a college degree myself. I would not last 30 seconds on the campus of Georgia Tech. I would not even be able to figure out how to go to orientation. I'm just not smart enough, dude, and I recognize that. So shout out to Tech. And all you brilliant people who are going to be building buildings and living in fancy homes with fancy cars because you have this great education, knock yourself out. We're proud of you. But this is football. And as you know, I apply a cheating lens on college football. And so that's where I always want to talk about Georgia Tech. Does Paul Johnson need to make changes? I don't know. I don't feel like the fan base cares about making a change. I feel like the fan base is content with Paul Johnson. So who are we to say, oh, they need a new coach? I do know this. Like almost every big game they had this year, they lost. Mm-hmm. You know, they won against slappy teams. Jacksonville State, is that what JB State is?
Yep.
You know, you lose to Tennessee. You lose to Miami. You lose to Clemson. You lose to Virginia in a wild game. You lose to Duke. Duke? Was that their only win in the second half of their season?
Yeah, it seemed like. The two losses that are unacceptable. And you beat Virginia Tech, which was a hell of a win.
And the win against Wake is a pretty good win this year.
The two losses that are unacceptable are Virginia and Duke. Got to win those. And let's be honest, Tennessee was too. And that's a game you flat out dominated for 59 minutes, and you had an inexplicable fumble. And then I liked the call to go for it for two, and then you don't get in.
I did not.
See, I do. Tennessee hadn't stopped you all day, and of course, the one time they do, it ends up costing you the game.
But that's the most Georgia Tech thing ever, right?
Mm-hmm.
Get you right up there to the, what do they call it when you get married?
Right to the precipice?
No, what? The cusp. The altar.
The altar, yeah.
What, right when you get to the altar and you're ready to put a ring on her finger, she runs away from you, and mm-hmm. you lose. And you're left there with a ring you paid for, and you don't have the receipt, and now you're stuck with it. That's Georgia Tech football.
404-741-0929. That's our phone line and our Solomon Brothers Diamond text line. You can hit up either one. What's next? Does anybody care at this point?
Nope.
Because if I'm a Georgia Tech fan.
Do you see
fan,
any callers on the line?
No. You know how mad I am right now if I'm a Georgia Tech fan and I look in 2 years and Kirby Smart's got Georgia in the playoffs? You can't even hit the we run this state because you lost. You can't. You can still say the hell with Georgia. Paul is fine. That offense is a pain in the rear end, but something needs to be done. Defensively, Ted Roof, it's been real.
All right, I got to put you on the spot. I really don't care. This is your topic right here, John. John wanted to – so I agree with you. Paul Johnson's not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. I believe he has that job as long as he wants that job. Do you think he should be fired?
No, I don't. Because of his past success, what he's done, you know, over the time that he's here at Georgia Tech, he's not going anywhere. He would have gone 3-9 this year.
What is it, Stanberry?
Yeah.
The AD, would you fire him if you were Stanberry? You had that job. Driving around in a Benz, making seven figures. Would you whack him?
No. But he would definitely be on a hot seat this year.
He'd be whack-a-bull?
Mm-hmm.
I want to bring
Because two out of three, you've missed bowl games, and there's 70 spots available for bowls.
I can already see the ratings are on the decline. We need to get back to real college football. Emma, let's hit up. At Rick and John 929, our Twitter poll, and see which of us won the head coaching job with the University of Tennessee. Not Jeremy Pruitt, not Mike Leach, not Dave Doran, one of us.
Well, the polls have officially closed.
All precincts have reported?
I don't think there's going to be a runoff for this one. Let's go through the numbers real quick. Rick, in the we need to win, 26% of the vote. John in the I know football ticket, 24% of the vote.
Haters.
Paul, which is very true, he is the only adult, and he is the only adult in the room. He came up with 20% of the vote. But the new head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers is going to be Mark Owens with the Make Fans Great Again.
What percent?
30% of the vote.
I mean, that is as close as it gets.
26% for Rick, 24% for John.
I demand a recount.
20% for Paul and M.O. with 30%.
Apparently, they don't like volunteer hostesses.
I think it's
to entertain recruits. Apparently, you guys aren't into that, and I don't know why.
I think it's more Georgia fans just voting for me.
A couple of tweets that I'm getting.
I love it. Congratulations, Zemo.
It's a good feeling.
Here's some Georgia Tech tweets I'm getting. The only certainty is there's a move from Russell Athletic, so at least there's a from Russell Athletic to Adidas, so at least there's a win there. Oh, and you know you have a gamer at quarterback. A couple other ones. I care. It's time for Paul Johnson to go. I hate the offense and defense, and yes, we need to lower the academic requirements.
Yes.
Here's another one.
Finally.
Coach Paul Johnson's downfall, his inability to find a DC. Here's another one. Disagree. Lots of Tech fans want PJ gone. One last one from Justin. The offense is obsolete. Tech will never do anything as long as he is there. So maybe people are more on your side. Move them on out.
I'm just saying. If you want to win big, Paul Johnson ain't your guy. If you are sound asleep on your football program, then he's your guy.
Hey, we'll talk to Dave Archer coming up next. He is our guy, and I heard he's in studio. So head punches around.
Really?
From the Idaho Rail Splitter coming up next on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game.